I call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
We have two members by Zoom. Any opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the February 10, 2023 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting minutes are approved. We now move to the report of the president. This morning we meet in public session for the first time since the violence that gripped our campus community on February 13. The university continues to offer counseling services to students, faculty, and staff so that no Spartan need walk alone. And I want everyone attending today to know that counselors are available on the third floor of this building in conference rooms 309B and 337 should anyone wish to seek support during or immediately after this morning's meeting. Now I want to call for a pause for a moment of silence to acknowledge the three students who were lost that night to their families, friends, and the Spartan community. Brian Frazier, Alexandria Werner, and Ariel Anderson. Thank you. And let us keep in our hearts the five students who are hospitalized and who face, in some cases, profound continued health struggles. We also recognize the significant effect this violence has had on so many other, directly and indirectly, students, faculty, staff, alumni, family, and our community. I know many experience ongoing stress and trauma. Grief is a profoundly personal process. As we work through our own feelings and our own time frames, we can be here for one another, drawn together as Spartans. I want to thank those present in that terrible moment who bravely responded to aid our students and this campus, and to the police, dispatchers, and other first responders who responded to the call. The university has moved promptly to enhance safety and security while balancing our role as a very public place. These actions include changes in facility access, door locks, and our security camera network. We adopted a more robust leadership structure for our Department of Police and Public Safety, separating the role of Vice President from the Chief of Police. Most recently, we contracted with a specialist firm to conduct an outside after-action review of the university's response. And we created an Office for Resource and Support Coordination to better support the students and families directly affected, as well as the larger university community. And we're working out how to best provide active violence training to students and employees. Our university community responded very quickly also to begin the healing and recovering from our collective trauma. The provost's office worked with colleges to ease students' immediate academic burdens where possible. I'm grateful to the faculty members and academic staff who modified their classes to support their students. Undergraduates were offered the option to take this semester's courses on a credit, no credit basis. The arts, too, have stepped into the breach to facilitate healing among our campus community. The Wharton Center offered free tickets to students for several performances and programs, and the lovely paper butterfly exhibit installed last month at the International Center also became a place of healing. We will observe moments of silence at our spring graduation ceremonies and will confer on Brian, Alexandria, and Ariel honorary MSU degrees certifying their enduring membership in the Spartan family. Now I want to highlight examples of excellence in our academic and athletic programs, discuss sustainability and RVSM actions we have taken, and conclude with some words about MSU's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. I am very much looking forward to our commencement ceremonies in just 2 weeks. We have a wonderful slate of honorary degree recipients addressing graduates at our three commencement programs. Jill Ruby is Undersecretary for Nuclear Security for the U.S. Department of Energy and Administration and Administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the former Chief Medical Advisor to the President and past Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And our own Professor Lisa Cook is a noted economist and the first black woman to serve on the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. As we bid goodbye to some 9,500 spring graduates at all levels, we said hello last Saturday to several thousand admitted students visiting campus with their families. I love playing the role of recruiter in chief and meeting families of incoming and prospective students at Admitted Students Day. Of course, it's hard to compete with Tom Izzo in the recruiting game, but it is fun to share the floor with him at the Breslin Center pep rally before the Spartan football kickoff. Kudos to our MSU debate program, which sent teams to the National Debate Tournament for the 27th consecutive year. One of their squads advanced to the Sweet 16 round to record MSU's best showing there since 2017. We also celebrated our 53rd Goldwater Scholar this season with the selection of Honors College junior Victoria Fox for this nationally competitive program. The Goldwater Scholarship Program seeks sophomores and juniors committed to a STEM career with intellectual intensity, and Toria is pursuing a major in neuroscience. And congratulations to the 25 exceptional undergraduate and graduate students and alumni selected for the National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowship Program, along with 8 honorable mentions. This is the country's oldest graduate fellowship program, supporting those in NSF-sponsored STEM disciplines pursuing research-based master's and doctoral degrees. Great students need and deserve great instructors and mentors. And I think it's important to highlight the world-class teaching that supports our students. I was thrilled to present environmental engineering professor Susan Mastin with this year's President's Teaching Award. Her exceptional service extends beyond the classroom to communities in Michigan and beyond. We make these presentations fun every year by surprising the faculty member during one of their classes and including their students. And what a season Coach Izzo and his student athletes had, ultimately stepping out of the big dance in the East Regional semifinal game with a Sweet 16 overtime thriller. We had a couple of seniors placed very highly this season on the other side of the basketball as referees in the NIRSA Championship Series for Collegiate Recreational Sports in Maryland. Accounting major Seth Summers placed in the top 20 among officials, and finance major Jack O'Brien ranked in the top 9, earning him NIRSA All-American honors. Congratulations, too, to the women of Spartan Gymnastics, who capped their season with a third-place finish at the NCAA Regional Final earlier this month. In their second consecutive appearance in the Regional Final, they tied their fourth best overall score in program history. We saw another milestone set this month with head baseball coach Jake Boss Jr.'s 400th win at MSU. I'm sorry he couldn't be at Old College Field for that home stand, but flooding moved the game to Jackson Field, and we are grateful to the Lansing Lugnuts for opening it up to us. We welcomed new head coach to Spartan Athletics, Robin Fralick, who grew up in this community and is the women's basketball program's 6th head coach. She comes to us from Bowling Green, where she built a winning program for the Falcons. And while we celebrate academic achievement as the semester winds down, I want to say how wonderful it was this month to participate in our annual Academic Excellence Gala. We saluted 350 high-performing student athletes who excelled both on the field of competition and in the classroom. Tomorrow is Earth Day. Today, I remember how MSU professor George Wallace inspired and informed Rachel Carson's 1962 environmental blockbuster, Silent Spring, with his investigation of pesticide impacts on bird life here in our own community. In that spirit, I would note that over 500 of our tenure-track faculty today are engaged in sustainability research. And we aim to practice what we preach as a university by cutting our greenhouse gas emissions by 50% from our 2010 baseline, as the 2030 strategic plan specifies. Along those lines, MSU's work to replace our infrastructure with more energy-efficient equipment and fixtures paid a bonus to us recently with the largest green rebates yet from Consumers Energy. Installation last year of a new efficient boiler at the power plant, new lighting and other campus upgrades merited rebates of $1.5 million this year from consumers. Those emissions improvements alone are calculated to equal the impact of removing 1,100 vehicles from our roads annually. To help us reach our sustainability goals, I'm very pleased to welcome Chip Amon as MSU's new Director of Sustainability and thank Melissa Wu for her leadership in this domain. He was recommended following his selection in an inclusive search process, and I look forward to working with Chip as we continue our long-running work to be Spartan Green. Another important position we are close to filling is that of the Vice President for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance. Our search committee, which includes undergraduate and graduate students, hosted the two finalists for public presentations last week, and I look forward to being able to announce a final selection. The work to improve approaches to prevention and response to relationship violence and sexual misconduct is never ending. I am proud of our progress in addressing the more than 150 requirements asked of MSU in our consent agreements with federal agencies. Since 2019, we have added 35 staff positions to the Center for Survivors, Counseling and Psychiatric Services, Police and Public Safety, the Office for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, and the Office of Audit, Risk, and Compliance. We've conducted two No More Campus surveys focused on the culture, perceptions, and policies associated with sexual misconduct. And we created the Center for Survivors Crisis Chat to support survivors, their friends, and family. We gained momentum in 2020 when MSU launched the Sexual Assault Healthcare Program with free 24/7 first response medical care to survivors, the first such program we are aware of on any college campus. We updated RVSM and Title IX policies, including clear definitions of prohibited conduct in alignment with community expectations and Title IX. We established a victim center, trauma-informed interview space for law enforcement. And we established the Climate Response Unit in the Prevention, Outreach, and Engagement Department. Progress continued in 2021 when MSU created the MSU PD Community Support Bureau, including the Special Victim and Community Care Units, led by Deputy Chief Andrea Munford, and a police social worker was also added in 2022. We updated our policy to allow revocation of emeritus status, which has allowed for revocation from several faculty members, and we amended the faculty handbook to allow revocation of honors and awards in case of misconduct. We launched an undergraduate student advisory council with POE, and we expanded the campus sexual assault response team. Last year, we piloted a 24-hour sexual assault advocacy response program for our campus neighborhoods. We updated the discipline and dismissal for tenured faculty for cause policy to outline a standard timeline and add transparency and consistency. We launched the Support More initiative to provide guidance for how to responsibly respond to disclosures. And we expanded MSU Safe Place staff with federal funding. We also completed two rounds of Cozen O'Connor reports recognizing continued investment in resources toward Title IX and related compliance. Now we are developing new professional standards policy with academic governance to outline expectations for faculty and academic staff. We are creating trainings for academic unit administrators, and we are exploring faculty hiring policies requiring candidates to disclose misconduct investigations. These are in tandem with our federal Title IX regulations and those recommendations in the QE report. I am happy with our progress, but not satisfied, and look forward to continuing with all of you MSU's journey towards responsible conduct and aligned policy. Policies and procedures are just one part of our work. Conduct becoming a great university and discernment and applications of those policies in the best interests of the students and whose interests we serve is our ongoing duty. Another ongoing way we are working to make MSU a safe and welcoming place is our recognition throughout the year of months-long honoring our diverse communities. Last month, our Asian Pacific American Student Organization celebrated its 40th anniversary at the Wharton Center. This month, MSU continues APEDA Heritage Month to recognize our Asian Pacific Islander Desi American community and its multicultural diversity. The month's events culminate tomorrow with a banquet sponsored by APASO and APEDA, which also recognizes this year's attending graduates. Congratulations to all. And it was good to read Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer Jabbar Bennett's annual DEI report that the 270-plus action items from the DEI steering report and plan are complete or in progress. We also have a new honor to acknowledge and celebrate in this area. Trustee Sandy Pierce was named a Michigan Diversity Council 2023 Woman of the Year awardee for her leadership in helping many rise in resilience. Congratulations, Trustee Pierce.
Yay.
We will make the university's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion a literally concrete reality when we come together later today to break ground on MSU's first freestanding multicultural center. I hope everyone can join us at the corner of Farm and Shaw Lanes for this ceremony. This comes just a day after we celebrated the ribbon cutting for the expansion of our School of Packaging facility. We are also proud of our top-ranked packaging program and grateful to the donors and stakeholders who partnered with us to support this expansion. I want to conclude with some thank yous to several of our students and faculty representatives to the Board of Trustees. First, to Coach Joe Kovach and Belle Letcher for their leadership on behalf of MSU's nearly 40,000 undergraduate students and its 15,000 students living on campus this academic year. Thank you so much for your leadership. And to our faculty representatives, Karen Kelly Blake and Stephanie Anthony, who are leaving their academic governing positions this year, thank you for your service to your fellow faculty members and to the board and to me. I wish all of you the best for what comes next. And with that report of consequential actions over the last 2 months, let us return to our agenda. I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, for the gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Vassar, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is January 12, 2023 through March 22, 2023. The total value for this period is $113,219,350.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to introduce the research presentation for this meeting.
Thank you. It's our tradition in April to have to celebrate student success, and today we are pleased to have a graduate student research presentation. Megan Hill is currently a fourth-year PhD student in the lab of Taeho Kim, based out of the Institute for Quantitative Health Sciences and Engineering. Her research is focused on developing new nanoparticle delivery systems that can be used for early diagnosis and treatment of brain cancer. Megan came to our attention after she recently placed first in the MSU 3-minute thesis competition, and she's competed at the Midwest Regional 3-minute competition in Chicago. Before attending MSU, Megan Hill completed internships with the Los Alamos National Laboratory and the National Center for Genome Resources. That's a pretty diverse background. In August of 2019, she joined the Biomedical Engineering Department at Michigan State University to pursue her PhD. The College of Engineering at MSU awarded her a dissertation completion fellowship for the spring of 2023, and her planned defense date is January 24 with her expected graduation in May of 24. After graduation, she plans to join the pharmaceutical industry in hopes of developing new medical technologies that can be translated into the clinic. Her full bio is in your packet. So please welcome Megan Hill.
Thank you for the introduction, Dr. Gage, and thank you to the board for having me here today. I'm going to talk to you about the research that we've been doing on engineered nanoparticles for effective brain cancer detection and treatment. So the type of brain cancer that we're focusing on is known as glioblastoma. It's a very invasive and aggressive form of brain cancer, normally diagnosed within stage 4, and has a 5-year survival rate of less than 7%. Now, these cancers tend to form mostly within the frontal and the temporal lobe regions, as we can see here with MRI and PET scans with enhanced contrast of a tumor formed within the temporal lobe region. And this can actually make these tumors very difficult to diagnose and treat. But one of the new things that medical researchers have been looking into is the use of nanoparticles to both help early diagnose and treat these type of cancers. Nanoparticles themselves range in sizes between 1 and 100 nanometers, which, to put into perspective, is about 1,000 times smaller than a single strand of hair. And so the type of nanoparticles that we're focusing on are known as Prussian blue nanoparticles. So they were first developed accidentally in around 1706 when an artist was mixing together two different types of rocks and blood, which we assume came from some sort of animal, trying to create a red paint, and accidentally end up coming up with a blue pigment instead, which we now know today as Prussian blue. Prussian blue, as we can see here, comes as a powder form, but this powder is actually composed of many, many hundreds of millions of nanoparticles, and it was actually used to create this painting here off to the left. It's still a commonly used dye and paint to this day, but as of 2003, it was actually FDA approved for heavy metal toxicity removal within the body for thallium and cesium. But these Prussian blue nanoparticles actually have a wide variety of other medical applications, including enhancing MRI contrast, which is our common diagnosis agent for brain cancers, enhancing photoacoustic imaging and photothermal therapy applications, which is the primary focus of our research. They can be hollowed out to allow for passive loading of common chemotherapeutic drugs for targeted drug delivery purposes. They can also be used to reduce local inflammation of tumors. There we go. So what we're focusing on is applying these Prussian blue nanoparticles for brain cancer. So the primary reason that these type of nanoparticles, or I guess type of brain cancers, are so deadly is what we know as the blood-brain barrier. So the blood-brain barrier is kind of a layer of cells surrounding your brain that prevents a lot of nasty toxins or pathogens from entering in and causing all sorts of havoc while letting in essential nutrients. Well, it also prevents a lot of common chemotherapeutics, diagnostic agents, or in this case, even Prussian blue nanoparticles from entering your brain and allowing us to diagnose or treat these type of tumors. Well, we have developed a new cloaking mechanism by using U87-derived exosomes, which essentially are glioblastoma-derived vesicles that are commonly used for cellular communication within the body. And using mechanical force, we've created hybrid particles that can naturally pass through the blood-brain barrier and into the tumor site, allowing us to not only get early detection, but hopefully localized treatment of the tumor. And so hopefully our overall goal is that by injection of these particles within the body, probably through IV, and then exposure to a laser within the brain, we can actually not only see early diagnosis, but hopefully local therapeutic effect within the brain utilizing heat. So the first part that we focus on with these particles is that we can see through the development we have exosomes that are naturally hollow structures, Prussian blue nanoparticles that are naturally cubic in shape, that through mechanical force can create these more spherical type particles, that through single particle analysis we can see that in red we have a Prussian blue core based on the iron signal, and then in green we have a nice exosome layer. And so for our cell-based applications, we want to make sure that because these are hybrid particles, they contain both the innate properties of an exosome as well as a Prussian blue nanoparticle. So exosomes themselves tend to have fairly high uptake patterns within cells because they are biologically derived. And we can see here that with our fluorescently stained hybrid particles, they have about the same high fluorescently intensity as our native exosomes do, indicating we still have that same cellular uptake efficiency. And then on the flip side, with our Prussian blue nanoparticles, when they're exposed to laser light, they can cause localized heat within a specific region that can cause localized cell death. And what we can see here is that with our laser, we have no indication of cell death, indicating the laser is causing nothing. But with our particles added into the mixture and then exposed to a laser, we see that we have specific cell death within the exposed region, indicating our particles are not only very good at localized treatment, but when not exposed to a laser, are very biocompatible. So, the exciting part of this presentation is that we're looking into in vivo diagnostics and treatment. So initially, using a subcutaneous mouse model, which we can see here, which is essentially where we inject the cells into the flank of a mouse to induce a tumor model, we can see that before treatment, we have nice, large tumor signal. But after treatment with our particles and laser, we virtually have no tumor signal left, indicating we have really nice localized therapy using our particles. And then on the diagnostic side, we can actually see that, as a reminder, when we inject these particles through the tail vein into a mouse, we're hoping that they're going to localize within the tumor region within the brain. And we can see that our particles should naturally be passing through the blood-brain barrier and into the tumor site. And we can validate this using photoacoustic imaging, which is also based on that laser application, where what we see here in green is our Prussian blue signal localized within the tumor area overlaid with an extreme blood signal, which is very exciting. And then finally, for tumor identification, we can see that our particles specifically can target the tumor region while not the rest of the brain, which can be very helpful during tumor resection during surgery, as it can help identify infiltrating tumor tissue within a healthy brain. And so to wrap up, we've developed a new hybrid particle that contains both innate Prussian blue and exosome properties that and also has direct targeting of brain tumors as well as local therapeutic effect. And our next steps actually include partnering with Henry Ford Hospital to implement photothermal treatment within the brain. We're hoping to enhance photoacoustic and MRI contrast, hopefully for earlier detection, and as well as hopefully applying this technology to a wide variety of cancers by just changing the type of exosome that we're using. And with that, I would like to thank everybody a part of my lab, especially my PI, Dr. Taeho Kim, for making this research possible, and as well as the Institute for Quantitative Health Science and Engineering here at Michigan State, with all of the nice lab resources that we've been allowed to use, including the photoacoustic instrument that we've been using in the imaging core. And with that, thank you.
Good.
Megan, thank you for that really remarkable presentation. May I call upon the board for comments or questions?
Yes, I'd like to say something.
Trustee Scott.
I was just whispering to Trustee Vassar. I had a very close friend who was in law enforcement in Muskegon who passed away several years ago from glioblastoma. Thank you. The work that you're doing is incredible. I get very excited when I hear these types of things happening, especially here at MSU. I recall when I first became a trustee, I don't even think we were just starting the bio engineering type of work here at the university, and how excited I was at that time. And to see students such as you doing such innovative work is absolutely exciting to me. Go green. I am so excited for this, because to be able to develop something and it happens here at MSU, that would be absolutely remarkable. So congratulations on the great work you and your team are doing. Continue to just excel. I'm excited for the work you're doing and what you're going to do in the future.
Thank you so much.
And that's really my question. Congratulations on being ABD.
Thank you.
Just make sure you finish. Because we know. So when you're done, what are you going to do?
Stay here.
What's next?
I'm hoping to join the pharmaceutical industry in hopes of applying this technology, hopefully into translation into the clinic, which will be exciting.
Mm. So the one huge commendation I have for you is that you are speaking in a language that most of us do not understand, but you made it so understandable, which actually speaks to your understanding of it. Mm-hmm. Because if you can teach it to, you know, someone who's an English major, you're doing a great job. You actually know this stuff. And so kudos to Dr. Kim and to the rest of your faculty who really have given you a sound foundation that you're able to speak to us and we can understand what you're talking about means that you know this.
Thank you.
And you got it.
Yes. Very good. Well, Megan, thank you very much again for this wonderful presentation.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I now call upon Interim Provost Yitzko to present the personnel actions and information reports.
Thank you, Interim President Woodruff. Trustees, I present for your approval the items on the April 2023 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments: Danielle K. Brown, PhD, Associate Professor, School of Journalism, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. David M. Markowitz, PhD, Associate Professor, College of Communications Arts and Sciences, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Olaruzian O. Oguwobi, PhD, MSU, Barnett Rosenberg Professor, Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. I'm also pleased to recommend Douglas Freeman Jr., DVM, MS, and PhD for the appointment of Interim Dean, College of Veterinary Medicine, effective April 15, 2023. Dr. Freeman brings the strong leadership background that is needed for this role, and I look forward to supporting his leadership in the interim period. The action includes the recommendation of Robin Freilich, head coach, women's basketball, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract, effective April 4th, 2023 to June 30, 2029. It is recommended that the title of Senior Associate Provost be changed to Senior Vice Provost and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect this change in title, effective April 21st, 2023. Finally, it is recommended that the title of Vice President for Public Safety and Chief of Police be changed to Vice President and Chief Safety Officer, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect that new title change, effective March 20th, 2023. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. President?
Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. Thank you, Interim Provost Yitzko. We now move to the Board of Trustees committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Vassar will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, Dr. Woodruff. So as chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Frederick S. and Marilyn Marshall Addy, Distinguished Chair in Economics.
Support?
Support.
Do you want to call? Mm-mm. No discussion? Mm-mm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby adopts the basic residence hall double room and board rate of $11,754 for first-year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 2023-24 academic year and adopts the basic residence hall double room and board rate of $10,990 for second year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 2023-24 academic year.
Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby adopts a 5% rate increase for 1855 Place and University Village apartments and a 3% increase for Spartan Village apartments for the 2023-24 academic year.
I have a motion. Support?
Support.
Vinnie Gore is here for a comment.
Thank you, Trustee Vassar and Trustees President. This year, we've seen unprecedented inflation. Our food inflation has been running on an average of 25%. So many of you who are in this room, if you bought your eggs this time last year, it was $1.69. At some point, it got to be $8 for a dozen of eggs, and we're not exempt of that. So with our two-year live-on requirements, we guarantee the rate for 2 years for the double and silver meal plan.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the issuance, execution, and delivery of one or more series of general revenue bonds. The bond resolution gives authority to authorized officers of the university to incur new debt, refund any outstanding debt, and pay related costs. The new debt is expected to provide up to $38 million for funding the Multicultural Center construction.
Does the motion have support?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the establishment of one or more lines of credit on a revolving loan basis for the purpose of maintaining the required cash reserves of the university and providing necessary funds to meet extraordinary cash flow needs. The aggregate maximum principal amount of borrowings permitted to be outstanding at any time under the lines of credit authorized by this resolution shall not exceed $75 million.
Is there support for the resolution?
Support.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the authorized officers or either of them individually are hereby authorized to negotiate the terms of and to execute and deliver in the name of the board and its corporate act and deed the term loan agreement. The term loan agreement shall contain such terms, conditions, and covenants of MSU Health as an authorized officer deems appropriate and as shall be approved by the Office of the General Counsel.
Does the motion have support?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? The motion carries.
So I just want to say that this committee has been very busy. We're almost done. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for a new interprofessional center to support health science disciplines and other undergraduate and continuing education programs.
Does the motion have support?
Support.
Dr. Norm Beauchamp, you're available for discussion?
I am available and delighted. Thank you. Michigan State University is the largest producer of physicians for the state of Michigan by far. This last year, we graduated 140 more physicians that will stay in the state of Michigan than any other university. And we're really fortunate to have two medical schools. Central to this was doubling the size of the College of Osteopathic Medicine. We need a facility that supports these amazing students and faculty better than we currently have. We also have a College of Nursing that provides nurses for every county in the state. By having a simulation center, we'll be able to substantially increase the number of our nursing students that we graduate for the state of Michigan. Really importantly, in a university that's so committed to collaboration, the anatomy and the simulation facilities will also serve the College of Human Medicine, and part of the planning will explore how can this support the College of Education, the College of Engineering, the College of NatSci, Communication Arts and Sciences, Vet Med, all of the partners that can come together. So we're very thankful and appreciate the support for the opportunity to further plan this building.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled Chemistry Building Laboratory Upgrades with a budget of $11,600,000.
Does the motion have support?
Support.
Dean Duxbury is available to discuss. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So as you will know, the chemistry department is very old. And to bring in bright new faculty, we have to renovate. So this is a large renovation to bring in 7 new faculty to help us reinvigorate chemistry. Chemistry is one of the largest graduate programs at the university. It has 250 PhD students. And so we want to make sure we have forefront laboratories to give them the very best for their opportunities of the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Duxbury. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? The motion carries.
Last one. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with a project entitled Chemistry Building Laboratory Upgrades, FRIB Radiochemistry, with the project a project budget of $12,400,000. And I believe, there you are.
Does the motion have support?
Support.
Support.
Well, thank you. So FRIB opened a year ago. We will start making isotopes next year and make them available. And together with College of Natural Science, we have hired nuclear chemists who will educate graduate students in the basement of chemistry. With your support in modern radiochemistry labs, that's a national need, but it'll also make the isotopes we make here available to folks for research at MSU in health, in CNS, and in other areas. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? The motion carries.
We will now hear the student liaison report.
We have other committees.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think that concluded your report.
I think that does conclude.
Very
it was
good.
Long. I was trying to move us right along.
Well done. Trustee Denno will now present the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
Mine's going to be a lot shorter. The Committee on Academic Affairs, we received an update on admissions and tuition promise grant programs from Interim Provost Thomas Yates. H-go. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. My German's a little rusty here. I think I speak on behalf of the entire board. Really appreciate all the awesome work you're doing. Executive Vice President Beauchamp provided an update on Sparrow Hospital and medical school match results. Dr. Norm, I think I speak on behalf of the entire board that we really appreciate your innovation and all your hard work, too. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Denno. Trustee Dan Kelly will now present the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you and good morning. Let me first apologize for not being here personally. As my board members know, 5 days ago I had major hip surgery, and I refused to allow the board members to see me using a walker. But having said that, as chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following. A license agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, Inc., a service agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, Inc., an option agreement with Copus Ag Tech, LLC, and an option agreement with Copus Biomass Solutions, LLC.
Support?
It's a voting matter. Yes. Do I have support for the motion?
Support.
Very good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Abstain? The motion carries.
Finally, the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance received updates from Marlon Lynch, Marilyn Tarrant, and Sarah Herbel. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Trustee Kelly Tebe will now present the Committee on Student Life and Culture report.
Thank you, President Woodruff. I'm coming to you live from the Fisher Building in Detroit. I'm so sorry I couldn't be there today, but my day job called for this meeting today. The Committee on Student Life and Culture reviewed the committee's charter, and we discussed ways to focus on the various elements of the Spartan student experience in its upcoming conversations over the course of the coming year. So hopefully we will have a new charter by the June meeting, and we'll continue to find innovative ways to learn about the things the students are doing on campus. That concludes my report.
Very good. Thank you very much. I now call upon Board Secretary Fletcher to invite public participation.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff, and good morning, everybody. We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We will now hear from Mason Vore, followed by Kate Dombrowski. Mason?
Hello, members of the board. My name is Mason Vore, and I'm a fourth-year student at MSU, and I'm a member of the Students Against Gun Violence organization. We're here to speak about closing the loophole in the MSU firearms policy that allows guns on campus. Our current policy presents a continued danger to students and faculty on campus by allowing certain visitors on our campus to carry firearms. I'm here, again, to demand its closure. The loophole comes from Section 18.01 of the university's ordinances that states that, except as permitted by state law regulating firearms, no person shall possess any firearm or weapon anywhere upon property governed by the board. The phrase, except as permitted by state law, defers our university policy to Michigan Firearms Act 372 of 1927. This act defines weapons-free zones, which includes schools. However, this statute only applies to CPL, or concealed pistol license holders, carrying a concealed pistol. Therefore, a person with a valid CPL may carry an unconcealed pistol in weapons-free zones, including our campus. We seek to amend the loophole by stipulating no person shall possess any firearm or weapons anywhere upon property governed by the board, regardless of whether the individual has a concealed license or is otherwise authorized by law to possess, discharge, or use any such device. This language closes the loophole that allows visitors to bring guns onto our campus and provides a basic safety assurance that our university has lacked for so long. We spoke last year on this exact issue, and the board did nothing, citing the legal counsel's advice to wait for the status of Wade versus University of Michigan that has little chance of being resolved soon after the return of the case to the Court of Appeals. We ask the board again, now, today, to close the loophole and not take risk, but catch up with every other university in the state in keeping guns off of this campus. It should not take violence on our campus for you to come to the decision that this needs to change and should have changed long ago. It's unconscionable that we have to ask again. It is the board's job to ensure the safety of its students and staff, and refusing to do the absolute bare minimum and close the loophole is a blatant disrespect to our community and a dereliction of duty. Stop cowering behind procedure. Change this today.
Mason, thank you very much. We will now hear from Kate Dombrowski, followed by Dennis Strahl.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Kate Dombrowski. I'm the president of Students Against Gun Violence, a recent graduate of MSU, and an MSU employee. In the wake of violence on our campus, I hope the board takes more seriously their duty to keep our community safe. Students Against Gun Violence has a platform of holistic gun violence prevention, and using this model, I want to paint you a picture of a more positive, community-oriented future for Michigan State. First and foremost, close the MSU loophole. In moments of great uncertainty, we need leaders who will stand up and do the right thing, even when it's hard. In fact, especially when it's hard. Guns on our campus are unsafe. In the past, the board has expressed concerns from the MSU Police and Public Safety Department about enforcement of this policy change. To that I say, do your damn job. You are the governing body of this campus. You make the policy, and it is up to the police to enforce the policies that you set. This backwards, defeatist mindset from both the board and our so-called Public Safety Department is keeping us from creating a safer campus communities. So be leaders. Be bold. Show our campus community that you are making serious policy change to create a safe environment to learn, work, and grow. Spartans deserve to live in a safe, well-connected, flourishing community. Policies we choose to implement right now in our moment of despair will dictate what our future looks like. Many of the proposed suggestions include locking down our campus and increasing policing. I want to push back on that and express my concerns for how that will change the culture of our campus. Our policy of needing IDs to get into buildings puts the onus of enforcing safety on students. We are asking students to make split-second decisions about who looks like a Spartan. In a similar vein, increasing policing on campus may make some people feel safer, but for many people, increased police presence makes them feel far more unsafe. When we're implementing policies, it's important to think about who gets to feel safe and welcome on our campus. But there is a future where instead of looking for outsiders, we're looking out for each other. To increase funding for mental health care, increase services and transparency for survivors of relationship violence and sexual assault, and to make sure all our community members have their basic needs met. We need to rebuild the trust that we've lost in our community, and investing in community care is the best way to do that. We feel safest when we know and trust the people around us and trust that the people leading us have our best interests at heart. So change the MSU firearms policy and start implementing policies that build a tightly woven, trust-based community. There's a better future out there if you take the time to actually invest in it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Dennis Strahl. Dennis, good morning, followed by Valerie Von Frank. Dennis.
I am Dennis Straley, trustee on the Eagle Township Board of Trustees and an MSU alumni. I was silent for a moment to honor those who died on February 13th, for those wounded, for those who witnessed the event, and those who live in fear of recurrence. Events like that are life-changing. If you are not aware, Eagle Township is west of Lansing, is mostly farmland. We are kind of a picture book example of quaint rural community. People born in Eagle stay in Eagle. My wife is fourth generation on our property. In the past year, a life-changing event began unfolding in Eagle Township, the possible sale of the 1,200-acre MSU property in Eagle Township, and the consequent creation of some sort of manufacturing megasite. If MSU cannot use the property for something to support and grow agriculture, as the donor had intended, then indeed, why not sell it? It is your right. However, please consider this true story that unfolded in our township recently. There are many parallels to the sale of your property. A neighbor and his wife were looking to sell some land that was in her family for generations. It is at the highway exit ramp. A truck stop company offered them a price well beyond their asking price. They told me it was an amazing offer. Still, they turned it down. They knew that the neighbors and the whole community, for that matter, would not be happy with them if a big, dirty, noisy, busy, 24-hour traffic-stopping truck stop was built on that corner. My neighbors chose to be good neighbors. Could they have used the money? Of course. Instead, they did what was right for our township, their neighbors. Will you, when the time comes, decide to be good neighbors and turn down the megasite offers? Will you accept a more realistic offer, an offer from a local farmer? There are several local farmers who would love to own that property, including the current farmer. And in remembrance of the aforementioned and the sister survivors, please include a provision in the sale of the property to a farmer of a memorial walking trail and nature preserve to be part of the farmland. It would be a permanent recognition to those whose lives were changed forever. It would be a place to unwind and remind us that we need to support one another and be good neighbors whenever we can. Please consider being a good neighbor and do not turn our rural township into a nightmare horror story with all of the negative aspects that would come with a mega site manufacturing facility. Thank you. Beep.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Our next speaker will be Valerie Von Frank. Followed by Ted Golden, I believe Anna Jeffries, who some of you have on the participation list, indicated to the board office she does not wish to speak this morning. But please correct me if Anna, if that is incorrect.
Good morning. Wow. I am Valerie Von Frank. I'm the president of POSSE, the Parents of Sisters Survivors. I hoped we would be here this morning to commend you as board members for releasing the documents to the Attorney General. I haven't heard a word about it, so I guess what we can say is that we will applaud Attorney General Dana Nessel for her courage and her staff for their ongoing commitment and hard work to bringing justice to the victims of the child rape that occurred on this campus. September 12, 2016, we, the parents of the sister survivors, had the first news that something was amiss at Michigan State University. We learned not from you, but from the Indianapolis Star, that your so-called doctor was a pedophile. 2014, your president knew. You had a Title IX report of sexual assault by this person. You knew in 1999, in 1997, in 1995, there were student athletes on your campus, not all gymnasts, who reported his conduct. It's now 2023, and this university is still providing cover for a pedophile. It is institutional betrayal that has been absolutely breath-stopping. For every one of us here standing in this room right now, there are dozens who could not be, for their own well-being or for their work or for other reasons. We don't want our daughters here. We don't want them to be betrayed again, But we represent as Posse 200 different survivors and families. I'd like to read to you the names of each of the public survivors who have come forward, but your time limit won't allow it. Our daughters weren't victims of gun violence, but the trauma of sexual abuse will be with our babies forever. If I were to stand here for a second, for every known survivor, it would take 9 minutes. You're running out of excuses. That's all I'll say about that. You talk about transparency. I hope every one of you follows through. And I hope when you kiss your children, those of you who have children, that you remember ours.
Thank you, Valerie. Our next speaker will be Ted Golden, followed by Nancy Vella. Ted, you are on Zoom.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, we can, Ted. Good morning.
I'm Dr. Ted Golden. After my comments to you in September last year, bladder cancer struck me again, and surgery was required. I was the chief of dermatology at Camp Lejeune from 1972 to 1974. No one was held accountable for a 30-year period of time when about 1 million individuals at Camp Lejeune drank and bathed with toxic water that caused my bladder cancer. I got involved in the Nassar scandal because of a lack of accountability. Last summer, with hindsight, legislation was passed that would allow individuals like myself to file a claim against the Navy. For some, the wait for partial justice took over 60 years. President Woodruff, it appears that you had a role in causing Sanjay Gupta to resign his position as a dean because of a recent Title IX infraction. Some feel that the infraction was minor and no harm was done because what Dean Gupta failed to report had already been reported. In 2014, unethical MSU attorney Christine Moore caused serious harm by exonerating Larry Nassar. Moore's conduct concerning her investigation and report of Nassar violated the Michigan Rules of Professional Conduct many times. Moore acted with guidance from the MSU Office of the General Counsel. Her actions allowed Nassar to sexually assault many women for an additional 26 months. The FBI would not have been part of the Nassar scandal in 2015 if Moore acted properly. Shortly after Moore exonerated Nassar, she was promoted and still works for MSU. At least the FBI finally stated that what their agents did was wrong and fired them. President Woodruff and trustees, I ask that you, in hindsight, condemn what Moore did and terminate her employment at MSU, just like the FBI did with their errant agents. The 6,000 documents that Michigan's Attorney General requested should be released to her and the public. That would help MSU move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. Our next speaker will be Nancy Vella, followed by Houston Strigo.
My name is Nancy Vella. First, thank you for releasing the Quinn Emanuel report in its entirety. I urge you now to take action to reinstate Dean Sanjay Gupta. The Quinn Emanuel independent report provides the evidence you need to determine that Sanjay Gupta was wrongfully terminated by Interim President Woodruff. The Quinn Emanuel report specifically states the interim president did not follow university's policies and procedures and, in fact, violated many of them in terminating Sanjay Gupta. The report cites inconsistent and unsupported facts that Woodruff asserted to justify her forced removal of Dean Gupta. She rewrote and made up policies to serve her own purpose. Additionally, the Quinn Emanuel report concludes that two units of the university under Interim President Woodruff's leadership interfered with the investigations of the OIE, even though OIE is to be independent. This administration's egregious meddling smacks of a conflict of interest. Dr. Woodruff's real motivation for removing Sanjay Gupta certainly comes into question after reading the full report. The report states, and I quote, "In light of Quinn Emanuel's analysis of the available evidentiary records and policies, the personal action taken against Gupta appeared disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation, and based on a factual record that included errors and omissions of relevant information and context." Who is advising the board on this matter? If you are taking direction from Interim President Woodruff or the university's general counsel, you are misguided. They are part of the administration that has caused this injustice. They have refused to take corrective action. Their self-interests are in conflict with the interests of this university. Stop taking direction from them on this matter. As a board, you have a fiduciary duty to act on the information you have been provided by the independent review. The president answers to this board, not the other way around. A board is to be independent. You need to take action. This is not something you can or should be delegating to the administration. I have one simple question for the board. Whose interests are being served by the termination of Sanjay Gupta? The interim president has unjustly terminated a dean who has led most of MSU's nationally acclaimed programs. He has been a prolific supporter of this institution, and his leadership has tremendously enhanced the university's reputation and mission. Fulfill your fiduciary duty and reinstate Sanjay Gupta. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. The next speaker will be Houston Strigo, appearing via Zoom, and then Kim Popovitz will also be appearing via Zoom. Houston? Okay. I think we... Yeah, Houston, are you on a mute by any chance? Hearing none, I think we can move to Kim Popovitz, also appearing via Zoom. Kim? can come back then if needed, if there's a technical issue.
Good morning.
Oh, Kim, is that you?
Yes, and the previous speaker may need to unmute themselves.
Yeah, we can come back on the list.
Okay.
Not,
great.
No problem. Good morning, Kim.
Yeah. Thank you and good morning. On behalf of the members of the Broad Advisory Board, I would like to share an email correspondence sent to the Board of Trustees yesterday regarding the ongoing situation concerning the dismissal of Dean Sanjay Gupta. Dear Board of Trustees, the Broad College of Business Advisory Board appreciates the recent release of the Quinn Emanuel Title IX review report and looks forward to the conclusion of this matter. As members of the Broad College of Business Advisory Board, it is our mission to make the Broad College a recognized and leading college of business. With this in mind, we have taken a vested interest in the dismissal of Dean Sanjay Gupta. Having now read the facts reported by Quinn Emanuel, we remain concerned about the actions taken by the administration. Specifically, a recap of the report reveals the following. First, four of the five primary reasons for Dean Gupta's dismissal were not supported by factual record or applicable university policies. Quinn Emanuel did find that Dr. Gupta violated the reporting protocol, however, reaches this conclusion based on facts and analysis that differ in material ways from Dr. Woodruff's August 18th letter sent to the Board of Trustees. Second, the reporting protocol does not place greater expectations on certain mandatory reporters, such as deans. And Dr. Woodruff emphasizes expectation that Dr. Gupta take actions that the policies either forbid, expressly delegate to another entity, or do not require his approval as dean, appears unfair and could create confusion within university leadership. Third, the actual reporting of the incident by students and business school administrators was done in a timely manner, and no students were put at risk by alleged delay in the reporting as asserted by Dr. Woodruff. FASA and OGC interference with an OIE investigation is against university policy and should be addressed by the board. And fifth, but importantly, the report concludes that the personnel actions taken against Dr. Gupta appear disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation, and based on factual record that included errors and omissions of relevant information and context. Under the board bylaws, the Board of Trustees exercises the final authority in the government of the university. The board is tasked with ensuring that university employees are treated in accordance with the law and the university's internal policies and regulations. The board is permitted to take prompt action on urgent personnel matters necessary to the best interests of the university. With the facts now revealed, we anxiously await the result of your work with the administration to bring this situation and correlating lawsuit to a close in the most expeditious manner that ensures university policies are followed and upheld and that every employee is treated fairly. Please let us know when we can expect a plan of action and of immediate urgency when you expect a decision specific to the leadership of the Broad College of Business, so we can all move forward supporting our great university and the Broad School of Business. Respectfully, members of the Broad College of Business Advisory Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. We will now go back to Houston Strigow. Houston, if you're with us, please unmute and proceed with your comments.
Good morning. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Good morning, Houston.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Can you hear us?
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning to the board and those in attendance. My name is Houston Strigow. I'm a 75 graduate of the School of Hospitality Business at the Eli Broad College of Business. I'm speaking to you today as well and support the reinstatement of Sanjay Gupta as the Dean of the College of Business. I want to thank the board for exercising prudent judgment in hiring outside counsel to examine the facts around his forced resignation. I also want to thank the board for making the report a matter of public record. While I have not read all 100 pages of the report, I have read the executive summary and other highly relevant pages. I've also read the entire contents of the lawsuit brought by Mr. Gupta against those who he believes did him injustice. One of the clearest takeaways from the report is how many people who were involved in his forced resignation refused to speak to the law firm's investigators. One cannot help but conclude that if they have nothing to hide, then stand up, speak the truth, and be held accountable. I am not a legal scholar or a lawyer. However, as a concerned alum and as someone who worked alongside Sanjay for many years while serving on the College of Business Alumni Advisory Board and as a donor to the Minsk Hall Pavilion, which he was instrumental in completing, I know that this man's reputation, character, and well-being were trampled upon by those involved in his forced resignation. The report exposed one leadership failure regarding the incident that led to Sanjay's forced resignation, and that was the reporting protocol violation. This is a clear example, as there can be, of the old adage where the penalty imposed does not fit the alleged crime. Based on the facts presented in the report, the Board of Trustees, as the ultimate body of authority for a fine institution, must immediately move to reinstate Sanjay Gupta as the Dean of the College of Business. You not only have the authority and the responsibility, but hopefully the Spartan will to do the right thing based upon the findings contained in the report. It is a sad commentary that Mr. Gupta has had to file a lawsuit to compel those who to date have refused to testify as to what happened to be held accountable under the oath and the jury trial. Sanjay's contributions, as others have stated, to the College of Business, its students, alumni, faculty, and staff, and to MSU are exemplary. We as a university are far better than the wrongful action taken against Sanjay. I encourage the board to do the right thing and reinstate Dean Gupta immediately. He should not have to wait until his lawsuit is heard and settled to regain his well-earned and well-respected reputation. None of us in this room deserve to be treated the way Mr. Gupta has since last August. He has suffered enough. We live in a society where a person is innocent until proven guilty, and nothing close to the latter has taken place. I know I will not rest until I see this injustice undone, and I will continue to withhold funding of my donor commitments to my beloved MSU until this happens. I thank you so much for listening.
Houston, thank you very much. We'll next move to Michael Balow, followed by Taylor Williams. Michael?
Good morning. I just wanted to begin by acknowledging some pretty amazing people. They are here on campus. I wanted to begin by acknowledging the hard work and the perseverance of the young men and women who formerly were of our varsity swim and dive team, who, after they were abandoned without cause and on dubious financial principles 2.5 years ago, instead of quitting, instead of pouting, they stuck together, they practiced together, and they had great success earlier this month at the National Collegiate Club Swim Championship, where MSU finished third overall nationally out of 131 schools. Every big school in the country was there. We also had, and that's in addition to the championship last year. We would have won this year if we didn't lose some of the graduates we had last year. We also had the top male and top female score out of 1,700 swimmers. Nobody could touch our number of individual championships, runner-ups, and especially the relays. The level of competition was fierce, with many former varsity swimmers in the mix at places like Purdue and Virginia, which finished just slightly ahead of us. Our athletes represented MSU proudly. Think about that for a minute. Stripped of their coaches, stripped of their funding, stripped of their righteous varsity status, MSU could not take their pride. If there's a better example of Spartans' will, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Some of them are returning to MSU's campus in the fall of this year. Secondly, very quietly over the last couple of months, the battle to save Spartan Swim and Dive has been working with MSU Advancement to raise $6.5 million, which was the target given. We've had surprising success with 6- and 7-figure donors. But we've been doing this with one hand tied behind our back because it's been too quiet. Imagine what we could do if we had the full power of MSU's Advancement Office and did this the right way, as you've seen with some of the other reports with the fundraising and gift report. You have our expertise combined with MSU's fundraising prowess to deliver the win for the campus and the state. We're very close to coming up with something good here. And lastly, please make the right decision for MSU right now. Outside of the swim team, build the Aquatic Center as part of the new rec center. Waiting will cost you at least $6 million in closing off one end of the building foolishly, plus inflationary dollars, which could easily add $10 million to the Aquatic Center, which simply has to be built. A presentation is out there that was given Wednesday, which showed the drawings. Something like $30 a semester for the rec fee would provide the funding needed for the Aquatic Center. Think about that, 6 cups of Starbucks. As a parent, I certainly understand inflation and see that for new attendees, the housing and food are increasing, but what do we get for that? It's just the same cost of doing business, but I get that. But think of what we could get for our 6 cups of Starbucks, a new Aquatic Center. I'd add that if it's okay to start a football building that benefits a select few without all the funding, then certainly we can do something for the campus and make sure the new pool is built and make sure the funds are raised and the varsity team can contribute to the rent in that building. That's all for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. We'll next have Kayla Williams, followed by Mindy Arwell.
Good morning. I'm not as tall as Mike. Hello, my name is Kayla Williams, and as a chemical engineering grad, I am excited to see the biomedical engineering program is flourishing with such promising students as Megan Hill. That's really neat. I also had the opportunity to dive while I was at MSU for 4 years, and that is a topic I have come to speak about today. I want to provide an update, and I also come with a request of additional support from the university in the form of a more concrete path forward. Allow me to elaborate. We started our advocacy over 2.5 years ago and have been consistent and persistent in our request to work together to find a solution to this seemingly intractable problem. For those of you keeping score, this is the 18th consecutive board meeting we have had speakers attend. In December 2022, President Woodruff met separately with a group of remaining swimmers and then with our battle team, and both times indicated that a sum of $6.5 million in operating expenses over the next 5 years would be needed to bridge the gap towards reinstatement. Invigorated by finally having meaningful dialogue with the university, our team immediately got to work reaching out to our networks to identify more potential donors. To put our efforts into perspective, the 8 of us leading this group have experience in the realm of engineering, real estate, accounting, and law. None of us have a strong fundraising background. We just share a passion for swimming and diving and Michigan State University. We were therefore grateful to be contacted by University Advancement to discuss a plan to validate conditional pledges towards supporting the return of these programs. So let's talk about the progress. We've been positively overwhelmed by the number of pledges we've received over the last month since University Advancement started validating our efforts. Despite some initial confusion around whether our efforts were still ongoing, this is purely a word of mouth and social media run campaign after all, we have managed to secure nearly $1.2 million in documented operating expense pledges, plus an additional $500,000 endowment to date. Combined, that's over 200% of our original pledge drive dollar value, with only a third of our original number of pledges having been submitted so far. We've had about 126 people officially pledged to date, and we are engaged in conversations with a handful of donors who are in the process of documenting 6- and 7-figure gifts. This brings me back to my ask. We have a reasonable target, but no clear indication on desired timeline or next steps. We would request the university join us and actively engage in our fundraising efforts beyond the simple validation role that they have been playing to date. We have no doubt that with the full weight of the university behind us, we can achieve the proposed target and then some. We've seen momentum pick up in the last week or so following the conditional endowment pledge, and even our rivals down the road in Ann Arbor have made a public declaration of their support as recently as yesterday. I look forward to continued collaboration and encourage you all to validate my statements today directly with University Advancement. They can surely add more color to this commentary than I can fit into 3 minutes. Thank you.
Kayla, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Mindy Arbaugh, followed by Brian Turnbull. Mindy, are you with us? We will move through the list then. Brian Turnbull is our next speaker, followed by Sam Stefanik. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. My name is Brian Turnbull, MSU class of 1984, and I'm speaking in support of a Big Ten quality pool for the new rec center. In my professional career with the state of Michigan as a senior assistant to the chief deputy director and later the department director of the Department of Management and Budget, The DMB was in charge of the largest building construction campaign since the 1960s. This was 1999-2002. I had a leadership role in strategic planning, construction specifications and monitoring, executive and budget recommendations, and key customer communications, and presentations involving almost all 23 state departments, the legislature, and the judiciary. The campaign resulted in three new Lansing office buildings totaling over 1 million square feet, renovation and reuse of the historic GM headquarters in Detroit as a state office building, building closures, consolidation of lease locations to own space, land swaps with the locals and the feds, and movements of thousands of state employees, and demolition and reconfiguration and renovation of all the Capitol complex parking lots and ramps. So it's a big project. So I feel that I have just a bit of public facilities experience to recommend to the MSU board and administration. One of the key things that I learned about public infrastructure construction was that all the elements required to get it done are only very rarely aligned, sometimes only every 30, 40, 50 years. So it's critical to build it right, build for the future, and be forward-thinking. Look to best practices and be focused on the values of the customer base, the people of Michigan. As has been presented to the board previously, Michigan is one of the top five competitive swim and dive states in the U.S. The data shows that the people of Michigan value competitive swim and dive and aquatics recreation, not surprising considering our 3,000 miles of Great Lakes coastline. I believe that this board and administration is the forward-thinking team that can show the vision and leadership to get the people of Michigan an MSU rec sports facility with a Big Ten quality 50-meter pool that will become a dynamic, positive experience for MSU students for the next 30 to 50 years. A $30 per year increase in the rec fee for a Big Ten quality pool is less than a quarter of a percentage point added to the first year student's $26,000 tuition, room, and board. A tiny sum for a multi-generational improvement to the rec sports experience for all students. So let's reach for one of the guiding principles stated in the 2020 MSU IM Facilities Assessment: excellence, modern facilities, state of the art, and commensurate with our peers. Thank you.
Brian, thank you very much. I do want to just go back up the list to Mindy Alba, who I believe is, I've been informed, is joining us via Zoom. So, Mindy, are you with us?
There we go. Can you hear me now?
We can, Mindy. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good morning, trustees and everyone present. My name is Mindy Arbaugh. I swam for Michigan State from 1992 to 1996 and am a member of the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive. You just had a lot of information shared with you about our fundraising efforts and how swiftly we are closing in on the target given to us. I echo Kayla's suggestion for you all to verify these pledges with your outstanding university advancement folks. They have been a true asset and a pleasure to work with. I wanted to take my few minutes to pull the curtain back on our efforts over the last 2.5 years and share an observation about our battle supporters that I think each of you, our university leaders, need to hear. As you're well aware, we have had multiple speakers at every Board of Trustees meeting since our program was eliminated in October of 2020. At first, the speakers presented themselves, lining up to share the passion and anger they felt over these cuts. As the month wore on, we became strategic in our recruitment. We had former Olympians speak prior to the 2021 Summer Olympics. We had Spartan women's team members from the 1970s and 80s to commemorate the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and so forth. When we reached out to these speakers to ask if they'd be willing to share their stories, the conversations often included a familiar theme. Why should I support a university that broke its promise? This isn't the Michigan State that I represented. I don't trust MSU. The trust issue has easily been the top concern of our alumni and supporters. Not the large $6.5 million challenge that was handed to us, not the continued wavering over whether to build a pool or not, it's trust. And we have heard this concern renewed during the latest pledge campaign. But here's the good news. We can work with you to rebuild that trust. The recent changes in leadership at MSU have given us some traction. We held a town hall a few weeks ago to answer questions about this recent pledge drive and emphasize that we truly believe there is new hope with new leadership. These messages of faith in you are making a difference. When we touted the progress of these leaders and the work with university advancement, we gained momentum, far surpassing our original pledge total. Indeed, more than 24 of our pledges are new. Some of them have no ties to MSU Swimming and Diving. They are just simply excited about the prospect of progress here in East Lansing. There is no doubt that trust is keeping some of our biggest potential supporters on the fence. Supporters, as Kayla mentioned, who could put us well over that target. And may I even suggest a supporter who could help fund a new aquatic center. Many of those who we have spoken to thought we were dead in the water because they had not heard any announcement, any confirmation from MSU. They need to see the change. They need to hear from you, our leaders, that MSU Swimming and Diving will be returning for its 100th season. This is a chance for you to earn back some of that faith, make and hold new promises, and bring in those supporters. Folks, let's make it official. Let's bring back swimming and diving, rebuild that trust in our great university. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mindy. Much appreciated. Our next speaker will be Sam Stefanek, followed by Anthony Navarra via Zoom. Sam, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Sam Stefanek. I'm a junior year student here at MSU in the Broad College of Business, as well as the Honors College. I'm the current technical chair and meet director for the Michigan State Swim Club, and I'm here today to speak about my experience as a club sport athlete and the importance of having pool space for recreation and fitness. I was never on the varsity swim team before they got cut, and part of what drew me to Michigan State was the opportunity to compete on the club team. I am proud to represent this university on the club, and am proud of the success and atmosphere the swim club has created. We are the largest official club sport in Michigan State, one of the largest college swim clubs in the nation, and have seen consistent growth in our numbers year after year. In 2022, our club was the College Club Swimming National Champions, and this year we earned third place in the country out of 130-plus teams. The swim club here has considerably enhanced my experience as a Michigan State student, consistent with data across all MSU club sports that concurs. Club sports are an important part of the student experience here. Being on the swim club has presented the opportunity to travel to different universities across the country for competitions. Each time we travel, I'm in awe of the facilities that other universities provide for recreation and student fitness. Almost all Big Ten schools, even many high schools, have world-class facilities that proudly incorporate aquatics that are miles above what MSU's current IM buildings offer. Even with subpar facilities, our club still has high demand. We are reaching our capacity at our practices and for the meets we host. We would love to host more people from across the country right here at MSU for larger competitions, but instead we have to look hours away to the east or west sides of the state for an adequate pool. At our practices, we have so much interest that the pool is overcrowded, we end up losing members for that reason. Despite the adversities of our training facilities and what we have faced this semester, our club members have persevered and obtained great feats, showing determination to prove themselves and embodying what it means to be a Spartan. I can assure you that people want to swim here, whether it's on a club team, recreationally, for personal fitness, community use, or visiting for a competition. There's a larger population of people here that is bigger than you may realize who are affected by the decision not to build a new pool. In a university survey for the new rec center, a new pool is the third highest priority for students at Michigan State. I see plenty of bells and whistles for the new rec center, but there's a huge part missing. A new aquatic center has been identified as a major need at MSU, yet the plan as it stands right now to put off building a new pool and demolish IM West makes the situation even more dire. I may have graduated by the fall of 2026, but in just a few years, this plan will have a very tangible negative impact on a segment of the student body here. It is a short-sighted mistake not to build a new pool along with the recreation center, and I implore you to seriously consider all funding options to get this new pool built. It will have tremendous benefits for multiple stakeholders, but most importantly, the students. Thank you.
Sam, thank you very much. Our next speaker will be Anthony Navarra via Zoom, followed by Chandler Jones. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Anthony Navarra, and I'm a 2004 alumnus, and I stand before you today representing the Financial Markets Institute at the Broad College of Business. Our board was happy to see the positive steps taken regarding the transparency provided by the release of the Quinn Emanuel Title IX review report. As the Board of Trustees is aware, The FMI board has been following this situation closely since we were taken by surprise by Dean Gupta's abrupt and improper dismissal last August. In our view, the findings in the report support our initial reaction of both surprise and confusion when Dean Gupta's dismissal was announced. It remains our view that Dean Gupta was treated unfairly and inconsistently, and that disciplinary actions brought against him were unreasonable. In the report, it was revealed that four of the five reasons for his dismissal were not supported by specific facts or university policies. Additionally, his deanship did not bring about a higher threshold for mandatory reporting, as initially suggested. We are also concerned about the efforts made to encourage the faculty and staff to not cooperate with this outside investigation that was approved by this Board of Trustees. Why would the administration do this, and who gained from that action? And most importantly, to quote the Quinn Emanuel report directly, quote, in light of Quinn Emanuel's analysis of the available evidentiary record and policies, the personnel actions taken against Gupta appear disproportionate, out of sequence, and with the underlying investigation based on a factual record that includes errors and omissions of relevant information and context, unquote. We notice that the report does highlight Dr. Gupta's successful record at MSU, and our board has witnessed this firsthand. Dean Gupta's actions and leadership have helped the Broad College continue to improve in the national rankings, and the school is home to multiple highly ranked programs. The FMI students and alumni of the program have benefited from these gains, and our board holds their well-being as the highest priority. We all seek fairness and equity in our careers and lives, and this haphazard and sloppy disciplinary process is an example of neither. Given Quinn Emanuel's conclusion as an independent third party, the board has the opportunity to correct a previously made poor decision. It is your job as the main governance body of this institution to make sure everyone is treated both fairly and consistently. Since the Quinn Emanuel report highlights that this wasn't the case for Dean Gupta, we look forward to this being addressed both promptly and directly by the Board of Trustees and resulting in a swift reinstatement of his deanship effective immediately. This is the board's chance to demonstrate it seeks the right and fair decision for the MSU community. Failure to do so would simply be more of the same old Spartans. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and go green.
Anthony, thank you very much. We'll next have Chandler Jones, followed by Alec McCurry via Zoom. Good morning, Chandler.
Good morning. To the esteemed members of the Board of Trustees, let us remember that progress is not achieved by timidity, but by boldness and courage in the face of challenge. I stand before you today with a deep conviction that every student deserves the opportunity to reach their fullest potential. My name is Chandler Jones. I'm a rising senior, part of the Accelerated Master's Program in Construction Management, and I'm an employee at the MSU Recycling Center. I also proudly serve as the president of Michigan State Men's Water Polo Club. It seems Michigan State is at a crossroads. We have the opportunity to invest in the future of our students and demonstrate our commitment to excellence, or to settle for mediocrity and stagnation. The decision to exclude an aquatic center from the new Student Recreation Center is a misguided one that fails to recognize the transformative impact it would have on the student body. Let me be clear. The current facilities at IM West, IM Circle, and Jennison Fieldhouse are inadequate, outdated, and fail to meet the needs of the students. Club sports such as mine, men's water polo, are forced to practice at times as late as 10:30 p.m., followed by early 8 a.m. classes. We have been forced to make cuts to our club due to safety concerns of overcrowding. We cannot host tournaments because our pool is not regulation size. This is not the environment that fosters growth and success for all students. A new auditorium would be a testament to our commitment to providing tools and resources necessary for our Spartan community to thrive. The national success of our aquatic clubs, despite the limitations at IM West, speak volumes about the tenacity and work ethic of students at Michigan State. It's time to provide them the environment they deserve. We must not settle for being an overcrowded forest, depriving our students of the healthy environments they need to thrive. We must be a flourishing campus, providing spacious and modern facilities that allow our students to grow and feel belonging. The decision to invest in an aquatic center is not just about varsity sports, but about investing in the future of our student body and sending the message that Michigan State is committed to excellence, innovation, and inclusion. It's worth noting that all but two schools in the Big Ten have a 50-meter pool. the failure to provide a proper aquatics facility would be an unacceptable deviation from the standards set forth by ourselves and by our peers. I implore the Board of Trustees to reconsider their decision and join us in this exciting and courageous vision for Michigan State's future. A $30 to $50 raise in the student recreation fee would be a small price to pay for the opportunity to invest in the future success of Spartans and demonstrate our commitment to one another. Let us rise above the challenges and obstacles that have stood in our way. As Spartans, it is our duty to be determined, resilient, and optimistic. We in the aquatics community remain so. Now I ask, will the Board of Trustees join us in finding a solution to support the needs of students, or will our teams be forced to take yet another step back? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chandler. Our next speaker is Alec Mercury via Zoom, followed by Emiliano Stockdale-Garay. Alec, can you hear us?
Yes, I
can. Good morning, Alec. Alec, we cannot hear you.
Okay.
Oh, can you?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Dear Board of Trustees, many Broad College constituents applauded the board when it retained Quinn Emanuel to investigate the dismissal of Dean Gupta because the reasons for his dismissal never matched the facts. I appreciate the recent release of this report as an important step in providing due and fair process to Dean Gupta. The Quinn Emanuel report makes it clear that Dr. Woodruff, the Faculty and Academic Affairs Office, and the Office of General Counsel did not act in good faith and failed in their duties. The 104-page report reveals some important facts. Dr. Woodruff's statements could not be supported by factual record or applicable university policies. FASA and OGC improperly interfered in the OIE investigation, which is in violation of the Michigan State University and Department of Justice Title IX agreement. University processes put in place to protect employees were either ignored or not followed. The incident was reported several times to the OIE in a timely manner, and students were never put at risk, as suggested by Dr. Woodruff. Dean Gupta's due process was denied. 22 university employees did not cooperate with a Board of Trustees requested investigation. Did they have something to hide? Or did they fear retribution after Dr. Woodruff told employees they did not have to cooperate? Lastly, and most important, the report concludes that the personnel actions taken against Dr. Gupta appear disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation and based on a factual record that included errors and omissions of relevant information and context. The Quinn Emanuel report also touches on Dean Gupta's strong record as a dean at MSU, which I wholeheartedly believe cannot be overstated. He has been a tremendous asset both to the Broad College of Business and Michigan State University. The truth is now known and documented. The Board of Trustees has exhausted significant resources to seek this truth and now needs to follow its own bylaws in the code of conduct and ethics of the board. With a costly lawsuit and possible further embarrassment for Michigan State University staring at us, it is time for the board to do what is in the best interest of Michigan State University and reinstate Dean Gupta. This decision would be supported by many alumni, students, and the Broad College faculty, who, as you know, have sent another statement of support for this action to the board. I believe this decision needs to be a Board of Trustees decision because the administration has had many months to correct this wrongful dismissal and has not shown any willingness to act in good faith. Trustee Scott, back in the December board meeting, you mentioned to Dean Gupta that after the board gets the final QE report, we, quote, promise to make it right. Well, now is the time for the board to make things right. Reinstate Dean Gupta. Go Green.
Alec, thank you very much. I understand some of our next speakers may not join us, but I will sort of double check and make sure that they have an opportunity to speak. So we have on the list Emiliano Stockdale Gray, followed by Forrest Schrapkowitz. Emiliano, are you with us? Seeing not. We will next move to Forrest Schrapkowitz, followed by Hannah Honeycutt. Forrest? Seeing no Forrest. Then we will move to Hannah Honeycutt, followed by Joe Garza. Hannah, are you with us? Yep. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Valencre Kaur, Sunrise, and I'm a member of the Sunrise Movement. Hannah, Emiliano, and Forrest were not able to make it, so I thank you for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the Sunrise Movement and on behalf of those three speakers. It has been 2 months, 1 week, and 1 day since the senseless attack on our community, and nothing we say will resolve our grief, pain, and trauma. Our hearts break for everyone impacted by this tragedy, especially Brian Frazier, Alexandria Werner, and Arielle Anderson, the students who suffered weeks in the hospital, and their families. No one should ever have to live through what our community has. We, the Sunrise Movement at Michigan State University, send our love to our fellow Spartans as we continue to heal together. Many of us call Michigan State University home. However, over the last 2 months, we've felt immense fear in places that once brought us joy, comfort, and peace. While we are a generation raised on mass shootings, we will never accept that tragedy is normal or inevitable. We are determined to create a better world, free from violence in all forms. We hope that steps like the reopening of the Union will help us reclaim the spaces that we felt were lost to violence. As we continue to grieve, we are confronted with the question, where do we go from here? We are grateful for the steps that the Michigan legislature has taken in this regard to pass gun violence prevention legislation in the past month. However, we also acknowledge that true justice, healing, and safety will not come from the state, especially one that has violence and dispossession at its foundations. Instead, we must build new ways forward and stand with the movements and communities realizing our collective liberation. We appreciate and stand in solidarity with those groups and students on campus that have been working in this regard to end gun violence in our community for years and have stepped up to lead the fight when we needed it most. The fight to end gun violence is deeply intertwined with the fight for environmental justice and with all movements to end oppression. A better world is possible only through the collective struggle for justice, and through these movements, we reaffirm our right to live. This includes resisting the urge to swing towards drastic security measures that expand the power of the police state and serve only to perpetuate a climate of fear, insecurity, and distrust. Only through building communities based in justice and our shared humanity can we create a safe campus. It is our job to move through the world with radical love to create and demand the change we need. To everyone in the room, we call on you to be in community with those around you. It starts by building connections and beginning to interact with each other in ways that affirm your humanity rather than take it away from you. To the Board of Trustees and University Administrators here today, the path to rebuilding a culture of transparency and trust must start here and now with you. It will not come through militarized policing and surveillance, nor through withholding 6,000 documents surrounding the Nassar scandal that the community has a right to access in order to hold this institution accountable. Listen to what the community is calling on you to do today and meet the moment through transparent governance and policies that allow us to trust and care for each other. Our lives depend on it. Through radical love and radical change, we create unity and a better world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our final speaker this morning will be Joe Garza. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Stefan. My name is Joe Garza. I'm the president of the Administrative Professional Supervisors Association, representing 1,300 members, and I serve as the chair of the Coalition of Labor Organizations. As you know, the support staff unions have made a request for a general wage increase. This occurred because after the June 2022 budget was approved, showing significant increases to faculty and academic staff compensation, which we support, the university contacted us knowing we would want to discuss additional compensation. We made our initial request to the university in August 2022, and we have had multiple conversations with university leadership. We have been patiently waiting for a response. We understand that the Board of Trustees approves the budget for the upcoming fiscal year in June. We want to ensure that our request is given the attention it deserves when you discuss and make decisions about compensation. We are willing to engage with you in your work sessions to further explain our request and rationale. There's a great deal of justification for this request, as I stated, and the presidents of AFSCME 1585, Sean Starr, CTU, Deb Bittner, and APA, Martin McDonough, also stated to you at your last meeting on February 10, 2023. Briefly, those key justifications are: when the university was concerned about its financial position, it came to its employees for concessions. We worked through those issues and arrived at an agreement that helped the university and preserved some important benefits for employees. When the university established it was in a better position, the university took steps to remedy some of those concessions, and we appreciate that effort. While the academic staff has seen compensation gains, again, which we fully support, those similar compensation gains have not been realized by the support staff. In her State of the University address, Interim President Woodruff noted that the university's financial health has remained solid. She also said that the impact of inflation is real and compensation is our top priority. Additionally, in MSU's strategic plan for 2030, it calls for investing in faculty and staff to attract and retain great people. The support staff members made sacrifices to help ensure the success of MSU during uncertain times, and those sacrifices continue. We believe your approval of a general wage increase would go a long way towards acknowledging equity across campus and investing to retain great people. I have been here almost 40 years, and I've seen the dedication of our support staff. They have always been committed to MSU and the success of MSU. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue with you. We look forward to your response.
Thank you very much, Joe. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes this morning's public comments.
Thank you. I now call upon Chairperson Rima Vassar to present the liaison reports, the chairperson's report, and trustee comments.
We will now hear from the student liaisons.
Good morning. I'm here on behalf of President Hannah Jeffrey from COGS to deliver the address from the Graduate Students Council. Good morning. The Council of Graduate Students recently said farewell to its graduating executive board members and the full council members. We will miss them, but we also thank them for all the great work they have done for COGS. At our last full council meeting of the year, last Wednesday, COGS elected our new Vice President of Internal Affairs, Director of Equity and Anti-Discrimination, Director of Event Planning, Parliamentarian, and the Medical School Liaison. We are very grateful to have a full executive board once again this year. We also heard presentations from three external speakers, including the Board of Trustees' own Trustee Kelly Tebby and the University Ombudsperson, Dr. Shannon Lynn Burton. During this time, the students asked good questions about future of university and their rights as a student. We thank them for taking the time to be there. We also invited all COGS representatives to attend a listening session with the search committee tasked with finding the next president of the MSU. This will take place on April 26th from 3 to 4 p.m. on Zoom. In preparation for the event, we have sent out surveys asking representatives who cannot attend for any feedback they have about the process. We hope that as many representatives will participate as possible to make the broader graduate student voices heard and understood. The leaders of COGS will continue to work with graduate students, MSU administration, MSU faculty, and the other interest groups throughout the summer to ensure the solutions to the challenges they face regarding DEI and RVSM policies are found. Issues that have been brought to us include DEI issue wherein a graduate student felt targeted by anti-LGBTQ2+ statements posted by a MSU faculty on social media. Regarding RVSM, COGS continue to work with MSU administration and POSI to understand how to best serve the survivors of MSU and NESR. Lastly, we are addressing the concerns that have arisen from graduate students about them not being able to finish their graduate studies in timely manner due to interruptions that have happened during their time here, such as COVID and the February 13th shootings. The fact that graduate students consistently found themselves being unable to apply for time off due to mental health concerns recently is just one example of how they have been underserved in the times of crisis, leading to a prolonging of their education and research. We believe that the new Office for Resource and Support Coordination could offer these students solutions to their unjust troubles if the office employees are aware of their situation. Thank you for your time today.
It works. Hello, everyone. I'm Belle Lutcher. I am the president of RHA. MSU's Residence Hall Association. I represent all the students on campus in our residence halls. First, I want to congratulate our new president-elect, Taylor Sutton. They could not be here tonight, but I'm very, very excited to see what they do next year, and they will be taking my place in the June meeting. Secondly, and lastly, I don't have a lot to say. I wanted to discuss, once again, the second-year live-on requirement. It is no secret that it is wildly unpopular with the student body, and frankly, it just doesn't make much sense. It's something that looked great on paper, but we now have the evidence that it hasn't worked at all. It simply doesn't make sense that we have a huge body of upperclassmen who want to live on campus and a huge number of underclassmen who want to live off campus. And so everyone loses. On top of that, it is a Spartan's right to spend 4 years on this campus, and it's really, really sad to see that go. This semester, we had to turn away freshmen from living on campus because there is no space left. And so freshmen who arrived this spring were forced to live off campus, which is the exact opposite of what this policy set out to do. It was a great idea. It wasn't great in practice. We tried, it failed, it's time to repeal it. Thank you.
Hey y'all, it should surprise no one that, unlike Belle, I have a lot to say. So, hello everyone, for those who don't know me, and for the last time in this space, my name is Joe Kovach and I'm the current ASMSU and undergraduate student body president. However, the 60th session of our General Assembly has spent the past 3 nights until around 2 a.m. in the Student Services Building every night electing our new Office of the President. So first I'm going to have Emily Hoyumpa stand up. Let me introduce you to our 60th session student body president, Emily Hoyumpa. Emily is a junior studying social relations and policy who's been in ASMSU her entire undergraduate career, spending this past year as our associate vice president for internal administration, as the treasurer of the Asian Pacific American Student Organization, and as the executive director of the Association of Big Ten Students. I'm more than excited to see all that I know that she and the rest of the 60th session office of the president are going to do this year. All right. To finish out my time as a student liaison, here are my last updates and tidbits for the board, many of which are pretty heavy. To begin, at our last meeting of the 59th session General Assembly, we passed 30 pieces of legislation, one of which was Bill 59-100, to allocate $10,000 to the creation of a memorial bench for those we lost on February 13th. We understand that the university is looking into larger memorialization efforts, but we're grateful to the university for working with us to create a space for students to continue to mourn that was created by students. Our hope is that students can create their own traditions at this bench to forever honor Brian, Ariel, and Alex. My hope is that Ariel, Al, and Brian never just become names or simply moments of silence. They were Spartans who shared this home with us, we went to classes with, and we were in clubs with, and whose presence will forever be felt here and by all Spartans affected on February 13th. To continue with the heaviness, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. ASMSU passed Bill 5990, recognizing as such, just a couple weeks ago. Let me begin here by saying deans should absolutely be held to a higher standard. If my entire organization of undergraduate students understands how to and consistently mandatory reports issues we hear about, no matter if we know someone else already has, a dean should absolutely be doing the same. We stand with Interim President Woodruff's decision, and seeing in writing many of the recommendations to our policies that survivors have been asking for years, for $1.6 million, feels like a slap in the face. Further, it is far too noticeable that there is something absent from this agenda that would allow survivors to heal and even just begin to receive the closure this university owes them. I'm disappointed in this board for not voting to release the 6,000 documents related to the Larry Nassar case. This board wants to show actual support for survivors. Thank you. If this board wants to show actual support for survivors and steps in transparency, then take a public vote on this matter. You're in an elected position. Make decisions in public, where your constituents can see them. My hope for this board going forward is an openness to engage with students in a more proactive way. We hope for a Kors and Kopp student liaison seat to the board. We hope for liaison seats on board committees. We hope for engagement on the reintroduction of Spartan Swim and Dive. We hope for an aquatic center built with the new IM building. And we hope for better communication between the students and the board as we go forward with more searches for leadership. Listen to us. We're here every single day. We know the issues, and we want to work with you all, as well as our administrators, to fix them. Oh, also, a 7% increase in room and board rates without a subsequent increase in student employment wages is incredibly inhumane. And finally, I have spent this entire year reacting to everything happening at this university, and this has been one hell of a year reacting. Student leaders, including myself, take on these positions because of how much we care about our fellow students. I've had the immense privilege of being able to represent 40,000 amazing undergraduate Spartans this year, along with my fellow Office of the President, including my amazing Vice President for Academic Affairs, Erin Iturralde, who has spent the past 2 years and countless hours being one of the best advocates for students that I've ever seen. At this meeting last year, my predecessor, Georgia Frost, introduced me to you all for the first time and ended her report by stating that she looked forward to ending out her term and being able to be just Georgia. And in a similar vein, and although I've loved every moment with my wonderful Spartans, I'm looking forward to graduating in just 15 days and being just Joe, with a heart that will forever be in East Lansing no matter where I go. Forever and always, go green.
I want to thank the students who are rolling off for your service. It's been a pleasure to serve and work with you and to see your advocacy for students in action. We will now hear the faculty liaison report.
Good morning. First, I want to wish our Muslim and Muslim American neighbors and friends a happy Eid al-Fitr. I hope I pronounced that correctly. With the presidential search now underway, with the advertised community listening sessions, I hope that you all will try to attend at least one of the sessions, and if possible, more than one. Although understanding that multiple constituencies are vying for seats on the search committee, the faculty are the largest, and a possible 3 to 4 slots is too few and not proportional to past search committees. I urge you to include as many faculty as last time, which was 6. We have solicited volunteers and received 82 stellar applications. Faculty have stepped up to participate in this most important task, and they are outstanding. The faculty on the steering committee are reviewing those applications next week and providing the slate of nominees we have recommended represent this large constituency. This is a low-hanging fruit opportunity, and it would instill confidence and engender trust in the search process for you to give extra weight to and to prioritize the names faculty put forward. I appreciate that the trustees followed through on their commitment to release the Quinn Emanuel report, although the investigation and the way it was conducted remain concerning. The report confirms what was already clear. A dean, an at-will employee, violated the policy, was asked to resign, and resigned. Spending millions of dollars, $1.6 million, plus whatever else was spent in the last 3 months, investigating an at-will employee's resignation and damaging the university's reputation is inconsistent with the trustees' fiduciary duty. As always, the goal of our shared work moving forward is to serve the best interests of MSU, and the report's policy recommendations will be given consideration. As a university, we must ensure that our policies are sound and reflective of our values, and that those entrusted with leadership positions not only follow those policies, like mandatory reporting, but exhibit good judgment. Chairperson Jamie Allen for the University Committee on Faculty Affairs submitted the Faculty Raise recommendation to the Faculty Senate on Tuesday, April 18th. UCFA has issued a clear, thoughtful, and evidence-based rationale for the faculty raise. Recruitment, retention, and equity are key considerations. The 23-24 housing and dining rate recommendation is a 6.95% increase due to inflation. Historically, raises have been approved to account for inflation, and last year's raise, the largest since 1988, is appreciated. But inflation remains high and affects all MSU employees. When inflation is high, it makes sense to increase salaries. It is imperative for MSU employees to receive fair and equitable compensation for the incredible work they do at this great institution. We all receive a green and white paycheck and should be compensated appropriately. Our coworkers, as reported by Joe Garza, are indeed earning a 5% general wage increase by coming to work and doing their jobs every day. Providing fair compensation aligns with our strategic goals across several domains, and it is the path forward to continued greatness. Vice Chair Anthony, and my term ends in August, and I have chosen not to run for a second term. To the faculty, we thank you. Shared governance matters, and it is vital to higher education. We have been doing the hard, the good, and the necessary work for the betterment of this great university. To our fellow Michiganders, MSU employees and students are doing excellent work, as evidenced by what we heard in the president's report, as evidenced by the presentation by Megan Hill, as evidenced by what EVP Beauchamp shared with us about the preparation we do for health professional students in the state. Please encourage your legislators to give our great institution the funding we need by increasing our state appropriations. This is the first meeting after the shooting, and to the Michigan legislature, we want to thank you for passing, and you, Governor Whitmer, for signing into law the recent gun legislation. Our work continues as we focus on building access, other campus safety improvements, and community well-being. We have been committed to robust academic governance. To President Woodruff and Provost Yaishko, we have all worked in a swirl of difficulties to achieve some incredibly positive outcomes for this university, but there is much work to be done. Thank you both for your partnership and your active engagement with shared governance. You not only stated that you valued shared governance, but you acted upon those stated values. To Joe Kovach and Aaron Itteraldi, leadership of ASMSU, a public letter of recommendation. You all have been remarkable, courageous leaders and invaluable partners to us in this work of shared governance. You have been thoughtful, compassionate, and passionate in support of students and the best interests of this university. You will now graduate and go on to make MSU even prouder than we already are. We appreciate your incredible service. We thank the board for the steps you have taken on professional development. Vice Chair Anthony was the one who pushed forward that resolution in the Faculty Senate. We issued that resolution for this action, and you are following through. We look forward to more as you determine your core guiding principles, and we accept your assurances that the public will see tangible results from your development activities. Lastly, we are in this together. We have different perspectives and experiences, and we need to work through issues collaboratively within the framework of academic governance. I have said it before, and I will repeat it here. Academic governance is a verb. It is the work we do. Let us do the work. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Karen Kelly Blake, and thank you, Stephanie Anthony, for your service. I do want to just raise what I raised yesterday, the fact that you two are pioneers in many ways. Two African-American women serving as co-chairs has never happened. Also, the fact that you are not on the tenure track, that you are literally representing the whole university as the liaisons is really unprecedented and pioneering, and congratulations on your award from the BFSAA for being a pioneer. Thank you for your work. So the first part of my remarks is around the scholarship award recipients. This semester, a record-breaking 206 graduating students were recognized by the Michigan State University Board of Trustees for achieving the highest scholastic average, a 4.0 GPA. Each semester, students graduating with the 4.0 are presented with the Board of Trustees Award for their academic excellence. I'm still looking for the names, but they're not showing up. So eventually, okay, here we go. I'm looking. Additionally, each awardee will be acknowledged during their individual commencement ceremonies in May and will receive a $1,000 stipend from the university in recognition of their accomplishment. As we take a minute to scroll through the names on the screen, please commend their academic achievement. They've worked hard. This particular class has gone through myriad changes, struggles, and have triumphed. And so I just want to take a moment to give them a hand clap as they scroll through the names. I'm honored to congratulate these students on their hard work and dedication and wish them success with their future endeavors. A lot has happened. I think that March made me feel like it should be November. Like I don't even know what's happening. It's gone by so fast. But I'm going to highlight a couple of noteworthy events that I attended. There were so many activities that I'm sure I'm missing. Really awesome activities on this campus, but I'll tell you about the ones that I was able to attend. The Cranes Newsmaker event, we have an alumnus, Matt Ishbia, that I want to congratulate. He was named the Cranes Newsmaker of the Year, which is a big honor. He's been a staunch financial supporter of our esteemed institution and a devoted protege of Coach Izzo. He is a proud Spartan who bleeds green and white, and we're proud to call him our own. The next event was in Detroit as well, MSU in the 313, and it was on 313, which I thought was awesome. On March 13th, I attended that event where more than 200 Detroiters gathered to celebrate fellow Spartans and business leaders who've been named among the Detroit 500 by D Business, which is a real magazine that I had no knowledge of before this event. So it was spectacular. Interim President Woodruff and Patty Galazza, MSU alum and Vice President of Invest Detroit Ventures, a big influence in Detroit right now in terms of the resurgence of Detroit, shared some of our outstanding initiatives and community partnerships that are fueling our renaissance in Detroit, namely MSU's Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation, which since starting in 2016 has supported students who have developed 700 startups and raised $57.9 million to fund their ventures and keep building. I think that's a big deal. As well as MSU's 30-year partnership with Henry Ford Health and recently announced new community development in Detroit's New Center neighborhood, a project sponsored by MSU, Henry Ford Health, and Tom Gores of the Detroit Pistons. The project will turn the neighborhood into a vibrant community with residential, commercial, and retail and other spaces. I think the Henry Ford partnership is one that's super important for various reasons, and I just want to thank you, Dr. Beauchamp, for heading that work. It was a great opportunity, and it prompted important discussions on how collaborations among businesses and universities can advance the region in meaningful ways and really double down on our commitment to the state of Michigan and its development. It's a pleasure. It was a pleasure to kibitz and nosh with remarkable Spartans who are committed to furthering their good work in that region and to learn more about what the future of the work will take on. I also, in Detroit, was able to join Broad College Interim Dean Judith Whipple and 120 distinguished guests at the Detroit Executive Forum. This forum featured impressive panelists of outstanding Broad College alum who shared their professional journeys and experience with the audience. They were supply chain folks. And so a lot of the things that you talked about, Vinny, around eggs, they were able to explain why we weren't able to get eggs on time and what inflation has done in terms of supply chain logistics, business development, and packaging. So it was very informative. And speaking of packaging, the School of Packaging yesterday, it was Trustee T-Bay and Trustee Scott and I were able to attend the School of Packaging building ribbon cutting event. And those renovations are actually beautiful. It's just not a regular building. It's gorgeous. And I want to thank again the donors for their investments in one of the country's leading packaging programs. I believe it's the only one with a PhD in the country. So they're doing big things, and this expansion will provide students with innovative spaces for learning and collaboration. The Feeding the First Responders project that Trustee Deno headed up, I just want to recognize you for your work. You and Raina, your partner, provided lunch and dinner to first responders to thank them for all that they do. This is the kind of work that I think trustees should be engaged in, and since coming on the board, you've taken time to show appreciation, and your effort is commended by me, but noticed by our community. So thank you for your personal sacrifice, time, and talent. And then lastly, I do want to address February 13th, and I want to, on behalf of the Board of Trustees, take a moment to thank everyone in our community who responded on that day and have continued to provide our Spartan family with astounding care. And compassion. Last night I told MSUPD and other safety workers that our community's response to this moment reminds me of someone I quote often, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who I look for in terms of an example of radical love and radical transformation and radical change and justice. I look to him for examples of how to love, and one of his quotes struck me that day: darkness cannot drive out darkness.
Only light can do that. And over the past couple of months, Spartans, time and time again, have provided one another with love and empathy. And in doing so, you have shined a bright green light of hope and resilience and love and grace to so many people. We have amazing first responders who selflessly rushed into action to serve and protect on the night of February 13th. Health and wellness professionals have stepped up and have offered counseling and other critical support to our students, our faculty, and our staff. I'm just so moved by the caring faculty who adjusted curriculums to meet student needs. Alums and broader community have donated their time, their energy, their financial resources, and support. For our collective recovery, our outstanding student body just amazed me with their kindness. I mean, they organized so quickly with positivity, from everything from encouraging signs on campus to the Spartan Sunday cleanup efforts, that big event where people were giving out hugs and t-shirts. I say all of this not just as a member of the board in the Spartan community, but as a mother whose daughter stayed on that in her apartment for 4 hours, I think five, sheltered in place, and just knowing that you all were here kept me from getting on the highway. Knowing that she was safe in this Spartan community kept me from driving just to hug her. I'm so grateful to you on so many levels. Please know that the board is here to support you. I apologize for crying. I promise you, last week I read through this and I had no problems. But grief takes on so many different forms, and I feel like you're over it, and sometimes you're just not. So all of you, just take the time to do what you need to do to grieve. Take the time to feel who you are in that moment and locate what you need for yourself. And once you've done that, do that for others. We experienced this tragedy together, and we will be here for one another. Please continue to give yourself grace. Take care of yourselves. I'll continue to pray for us. I say their names: Alex, Ariel, Brian, and I speak peace to their families and to their friends. I'll also continue to give thanks to all of you here today and across the university. I'm grateful, and I thank you all, Spartans, for the light you bring to our community, helping to drive out the darkness. I am inspired by all of you and grateful to be in this special community. Go green.
Go white.
Thank you very much, Chair Bassa. We'll now move into trustee comments. I will start with Vice Chair Kelly.
Thank you. First of all, I join with Chair Mather with regard to the February 13th tragedy. I'd also like to just point out, this is a little off script, that I think the entire community has to have a significant recognition for our new chair, who in the past 4 months has not only worked harder than anyone I've seen on this board, but is a great representative for this Board of Trustees. We're lucky we selected her, and I want to thank her personally. With that said, there are a couple of recognitions, and I want to thank the interim president for giving me a heads up on this. First of all, we have received a NASSAR grant. Associate Professor David Ferguson of MSU received his first NASCAR grant to study heat exhaustion in race car vehicles during competitions. Throughout the next year, Ferguson and his team will attend high-profile NASCAR races throughout the country to collect data. And that sounds pretty exciting.
With regard to faculty success, this year's recipient of the President's Distinguished Teaching Award is Susan Mastin, Professor and Associate Chair for Undergraduate Studies in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. The award recognizes Mastin's approach to teaching, extending her knowledge beyond the classroom setting and empowering her students to be a force for change. Professor Emeritus David Arson received the Champion of Children Award and the Michigan Association of Superintendents and Administration. The award recognizes individuals who have made significant contributions to improving the quality of education in Michigan. Fahar Abbasi, Assistant Professor in the College of Osteopathic Medicine, has been named as one of the top 15 women in the nation to be honored at the Women of Frontlines, celebrating Women Faith Leaders Celebration. That concludes my comments with regard to recognitions, and I know that it's been a long meeting, but there are some additional comments that I would like to make. These have to do in response to the Attorney General's request of April 14th, last Friday, of the Board of Trustees. Earlier this week, I informed the board that I decided to recuse from the board's decision and or action with regard to the Attorney General's request. This is the first time in 6+ years that I've recused from a vote, and because I take it very seriously, I think there's some explanation. First, I took office on this Board of Trustees in January of 2018, approximately 14 months after Larry Nassar was arrested, terminated, and I believe jailed. I never sat on this board during any period of time that Larry Nassar was an employee of this university. Following that, within the first couple of months of my position as a trustee, I participated in and supported the board's decision to refer this matter to the Attorney General for an investigation. As part of that investigation, I personally volunteered to submit my cell phone, telephone, or laptop, emails, and this included personal work and MSU documents for a download and a review by a third party, which occurred within, I believe, approximately the first 6 months that I was on the Board of Trustees. In addition to that, I participated in a criminal investigation and interview with the Michigan State Police. I did all of that knowing fully well that I had no documents or communications at any time while Larry Nassar was an employee of this university. But I did so voluntarily because I believe that a full investigation of Larry Nassar was important. Within a year, I also chaired a subcommittee of the Board of Trustees that included Nancy Schlichting, Brianna Scott, and I believe Brian Mosala, whose purpose was to meet with survivor representatives to come up with a scope, a request for proposal, to conduct an independent investigation of the Nassar matter. We met, myself and others, personally with survivor representatives over the course of about 4 to 6 months. We came up with that RFP, we developed a scope, we went out for bid, we interviewed multiple law firms for the purposes of conducting the independent investigation, and we came back to the board, the full board, with a recommendation to hire a law firm to conduct that investigation. As part of that work with the survivor representatives, and it was not homogeneous, let me tell you, homogeneous. There are differences within the survivors community, and I understand that. But we were working through the very issues that unfortunately still are in front of us. The issue of waivers, access to documents. But the point was is that we were joined together to try to work through that to get through an independent investigation. When it came back to the board decided to not move forward. Fast forward to last Friday, we received the request from the Attorney General requesting the release of additional documents. Within hours of that request becoming public, I personally began to receive media inquiries, and these are by way of voicemail, asking me whether or not I was going to recuse from the decision because I had a conflict. Now, as offensive to me as that is, the conflict, as explained to me in the voicemail, was because the Attorney General had specifically named me in the request related to the same documents that I talked about that were produced back in 2018. I am only one of two board members currently on the board who was specifically named by the Attorney General. So again, while it's offensive to me that someone would claim that I have a conflict, I understand. After reviewing it, I do not believe it's appropriate that I engage in any decision with regard to the response to the Attorney General. The documents, I fully complied with every request that I've had over the last 6 months, or 6 years, I should say. It's very clear to me that I doubt that anything involving any communication of mine is the subject of the investigation, but I also recognize that there will be some that claim that I have a conflict and that I should step back. And so again, I've notified the board earlier this week that I'm recusing myself from any decision related to a response to the Attorney General. And with that, I appreciate the time, and I thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kelly. Trustee Byram is not here with us this morning. She was unable to join us today due to unexpected travel delays. She regrets, obviously, not being with us. We will now go sort of in alphabetical order, starting with Trustee Denno.
Thank you. You know, to the NASA survivors, their parents, their families, the only thing I can say to you is I'm sorry. I'm sorry a great university can just be at times really shitty, and I don't know what else to say. I, too, want to wish our Muslim friends a wonderful and joyous holiday. I want to dovetail off something Chair Vassar said, that I think it was April 17th, we had food trucks for lunch and dinner for every single law enforcement entity that was here on campus. On February 13th, that was a way to thank them for everything they did for our community. We had about 100 law enforcement officials show up, which was great. We delivered 20 lunches and 20 dinners to dispatch, you know, the 911 center, Ingham County 911 center, and we delivered 20 dinners to Lansing Police night shift. as far as the Presidential Search Committee, some of you know I'm the chair of that committee. I'm very honored and humbled to be leading the process to find our permanent president, our 22nd president. Trustee Scott's the vice chair. Trustee Kelly and Kanaki Jefferson will be joining us. I'm really excited about this committee. I'm excited about building out the larger committee. It's going to be a large, robust, diverse committee. Isaacs and Miller has been selected as the executive search firm to assist in the process. They are the same firm also currently assisting the university with the selection of the next vice president. For civil rights and Title IX, education and compliance, and other executive positions in MSU colleges. And even though they helped pick the University of Michigan president, we still decided to hire them. Community listening sessions began on April 14th. The next one will take place at 6 p.m., Monday, April 24th, continuing through Friday, April 28th. All sessions are held virtually and are available online. You can find more info at presidentialsearch.msu.edu. and last thing, I just want to reiterate my comments in the January board meeting where I just want to thank law enforcement for all you do for our communities to keep us safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Denno. Trustee Pierce.
Thank you, Stefan. Let me just make a few comments of those that are present today.
first of all, Megan Hill, for your commitment to working on really breakthrough technology in the medical field that will not only save lives but extend lives. Thank you. To Belle and to Joe and to Hannah, thank you for advocating for undergraduate and graduate students. Thank you for bringing issues that we need to hear. And thank you for recognizing and really celebrating all of your accomplishments in the undergraduate and graduate programs. Thank you. To Karen and Stephanie, thank you for all of the work that you have done representing the faculty, the foundation of Michigan State University, and for Jamie and Deanne for continuing your service as a liaison. As I think about the faculty of Michigan State University, and I think about the events that are going on not only in this campus, which we've talked about today, but in the world with the political divisiveness and the global pandemic and the war on Ukraine and the economic uncertainty, and then everything going on in this campus. You, the faculty, are preparing our students. You're preparing the next generation to face every obstacle and every opportunity with perseverance and determination and the will of a Spartan. And so for that, we are very grateful. I want to thank Dr. Rima for your comments today. I really do appreciate you on behalf of the board. Everything that you said, I'm completely aligned with. So thank you for that. And thank you for your leadership, which has been exceptional. I do want to spend a minute, if I can, on something that's coming up on April 29th that I want everyone to be familiar with and I'm very excited about. It's called the Empower Her Leadership Retreat. And it was started by the former Michigan State basketball coach, Susie Merchant. And it's a one-day retreat. It focuses on empowering girls by teaching them skills to overcome challenges that they may face in their life. This year, nearly 400 are registered to participate. It's the highest number we've had. And they're from 4th through 9th grade, 9 to 15-year-old girls. Think about that. Coming from all over Michigan, 20 counties represented. Classes and workshops are going to be put on, designed for every age range to cater to their current experiences and things that they might experience in life. I think it's fabulous that MSU is doing this, and I do appreciate it. And finally, to those of you that came forward today and in previous board meetings with public comments, I want you to know that as the Board of Trustees, we are listening, we do care, and we are committed to fulfill our fiduciary responsibilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Scott did let me know before she left that obviously she is listening in, but is not in a position with the audio to offer the comment at this time. Trustee Tebe.
Thanks, Stefan. I just want to echo Dr. Vassar's comments regarding February 13th and also Trustee Denel's comments as well. Also want to let you know, Dan, that you missed out on the tour of the kinesiology school yesterday where we got to meet Dr. Ferguson, who's running the NASCAR program, which is very cool. And I suggest that when you don't have a walker anymore that you go see it as well. I really want to thank Rima, you, for your leadership over the last few months. It feels like years, but it is actually, now that I look at it, only been 3 months and 21 days, which is insane to me. I just think that we are all very lucky to have someone who's not afraid to be bold and to tell the truth. And so I'm just very grateful to have you at the helm of this board and continuing to push everyone to be better and do better. So thank you for everything that you do for us. I also want to thank Joe and Val.
who I believe are there still, for your leadership. And Stevie as well, who I was told is not present, but Stevie, if you're listening, I very much appreciate working with you over the last year. But Joe, I don't even have words to just sort of describe how amazing you are, and I hope you know that. I can't even fathom representing 40,000 students and taking care of all of their needs and challenges and doing it with such grace and empathy and courage and diligence. I just think I feel very grateful to have spent this last year watching you lead. I think we all are really lucky to have seen what a tremendous leader you are, and I am very much looking forward to seeing what you do with your life, because I know you're going to do really great things and make us all proud. And I just want to thank you so much for all of the time that you've put in over the last year, and especially over these last few months. And Belle, thank you so much for everything that you have done. You are a fabulous advocate for all of the students that are living on campus, and no one could have any doubt in your voice and lifting up their voices of the struggles that you have had in the dorms and in the residence halls over the last year. I'm very excited that you're going to be still with us in the law school, which is super exciting, but I just think that you are fabulous as well, and I'm glad you're not leaving us just yet, because you are a true asset to this community. Emily, if you're still out in the audience, I'm very much looking forward to working with you in the future, and congratulations, and to Taylor, the new president of RHA, looking forward to working with you as well, and Hannah, looking forward to continuing working with you as your leadership in COGS. And lastly, I just want to sort of expand after something that Dr. Rima said about taking care of ourselves. I hope that after we celebrate everyone on graduation weekend, that we take the summer to really take care of one another and take care of yourself and continue to lean on one another when needed and ask for help if you need it. I hope everyone does get to have a little fun this summer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trustee Tebay. Chair Vassar, I believe you have additional comment.
Yes. On behalf of the board, to those who spoke earlier today in public comment, we want you to know that we do hear you. We see you. We see you with trembling voices and shaking knees come and advocate for what you believe in and what you think is best. And we appreciate you coming every time and your diligence and your persistence. To Valerie and members of the PASI and all survivors, your advocacy has not gone unnoticed. You continue to make positive change. I know that sometimes you don't feel that it's fast enough. Being courageous and fighting for others is sometimes lonely work, and I'm sorry for the pain this institution has caused you and the pain you must feel today. Please know that you are not alone. I must share that in response to the Attorney General's most recent request to waive attorney-client privilege, MSU's general counsel will inform the AG's office that we will not take any new action. Therefore, we will continue to maintain attorney-client privilege. We understand that for those who continue to push for transparency with this particular action, this might not be what you want to hear. I'm pretty sure it's not. On behalf of the board, please know we are sorry. We recognize that MSU is a continual site of trauma for survivors. We will continue to devote time and resources to facilitate a healing culture for all members of our community, and we're committed to treating you with the respect and care you deserve during this time and during this long, arduous journey that we have ahead of us. I apologize personally and on behalf of this board.
Interim President Woodruff, that Interim President Woodruff, that concludes this morning's trustee comments.
Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Support.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting is adjourned.